Following is a talk given by Arden Anderson, the case for nutrient-dense foods, the case against genetically modified foods, made available to you by Hybrix Gardens. Feel free to duplicate and pass this on to friends. Visit us at www.hybrixgardens.com.
Well, thank you very much. It's certainly a pleasure to be here this evening, and it's really heartwarming to see people interested in changing their food and ultimately then changing their own human health as well as the environment. We have a few things up here that we will test, and tonight we want to talk about nutrient-dense food, how do you get there, and why it's important, food quality. We'll talk a few things regarding genetically engineered crops, as well as some of those consequences, long-term and short-term, as well as any other questions that you might have. So feel free at any time, if you have a question, to stop me, raise your hand, and we'll answer that question the best we can. I do have a fair amount of information I'd like to cover, but mainly the theme really that we want to get across to you is that human health is absolutely correlated to your diet, which is absolutely dependent upon the food that you put in that diet. Everybody's on a diet. Everyone. Even if you're a breatharian, you're on a diet. Might be an air diet, but nonetheless, you are on a diet. And so it's not so much what diet we're on that is most important. It's what's in that diet, what makes up that diet. So you could be a vegetarian, and you had Brenda Cobb talking here, I think it was a week ago. She has marvelous work, and a lot of the things that she talks about, absolutely correct. There are a number of different places around the country similar to what she has down in Atlanta. There's the Hippocrates Institute in Florida. There's the Black Hills Resort Clinic out in the Dakotas. So there's different places that people can go to follow a dietary program or go through a nutritional cleanse, if you will, and regenerative process. But the bottom line really is it doesn't matter whether you are a strict vegetarian or whether you are a meat eater, the quality of that food is what really determines the outcome. And what I've seen, at least in traveling around the world, some of the sickest people I've ever met are meat eaters, and some of the sickest people I've ever met are strict vegetarians. Some of the healthiest people I have ever met are meat eaters, and some of the healthiest people I have ever met are strict vegetarians. So the point that we have to get across is not the diet per se that is the issue. It's what makes up the diet that is the issue. And so that means food quality. And that doesn't mean that there's some name on the food, because the discussion of food quality has perhaps a number of different meanings to that. Some people think that food quality means the food is certified organic. Some people think that food quality means that it's been sterilized by some means, whether it's been sterilized via some chemical, whether it's been sterilized via some cooking process, or whether it's been sterilized by some radiation process. That's what people think of as food quality or quality food. Other people understand that none of those things really make any difference if you don't have any nutritive value in the food. Now, when we say don't have any nutritive value, I'm not necessarily saying that the food has zero nutrients to that, but what we are talking about is the amount of nutrients you need specifically for your body to be healthy. And And so each person is going to be slightly different as far as what one person needs maybe a little bit more of than another person because of, one, their background, in other words, their family background. And there's a lot of discussion out there, particularly in the medical profession. They want to say that everything is genetically related, that, oh, your family has a relationship to cancer, your family has a relationship to heart disease, or your family has a relationship to diabetes, and so it really doesn't matter what you do, because you're in that family chain, and you're going to be very susceptible regardless of what you do. Well, the reality of it is that environment and your diet makes up a huge component of your environment, determines genetic expression. And what that means is that the reason certain families have susceptibility to cancer or to heart disease or diabetes or to Alzheimer's or to whatever it might be, arthritis or you name it, is because families tend to what? Eat the same. And particularly, you can go back to the old country. So you go back into Europe, which most of us are European descent, either northern or southern or eastern or western Europe. And what do you find? In the old country, they eat about the same today as they did 500 years ago. And so, what are they susceptible to? Same kinds of illnesses. Year after year after generation after generation after century. And part of the problem is, and Dr. Kerry Reams used to tell us this, that it's not so much that people are sick because of what they eat. Now, that was more in his time, because I can tell you today, people are sick because of what they eat. But the point is, it's not so much that people are sick by what they eat, it's what they neglect to eat that makes them sick. How many of you remember what you had for breakfast 10 years ago today? Now, some of you can raise your hand because what you had was oatmeal. A glass of orange juice, maybe a slice of toast, and a banana. And some of those same people, we can ask, what did you have 20 years ago today? Well, we had oatmeal, a banana, and a glass of orange juice, and a slice of toast. Well, what did you have 50 years ago? The same thing. Am I saying there is a problem with bananas, oatmeal, toast, and a glass of orange juice? Yes. And no. It's not so much that there is a problem with oatmeal, banana, orange juice, and toast. It's that you have neglected to eat anything of the thousand other possibilities for breakfast. Oh, but we've heard that oatmeal is good to reduce your cholesterol. So? Oh, we've heard that oatmeal is high in fiber, so that's good for the colon. So? So are a number of other things that you should be eating for breakfast. The next step in that discussion, however, is not just the lack of variety in your diet, but what is the actual quality of that oatmeal, orange juice, banana, and toast? And what do I mean by the quality? Is it certified organic? Maybe, maybe not. So, does certified organic mean it's better? Some people would like you to believe it does. It should. Unfortunately, the whole organic system has been so compromised by the federal government and by the politicians that certified organic does not necessarily mean that the product is any better than anything else. I'm not telling you it shouldn't be. I'm simply telling you the reality of the process. But there are ways that we can determine whether or not a product is better or worse for you? And that comes back to really basic things. Now, think for a moment. If you are making oatmeal, now how many of you raise oats? There's a few of you here that raise oats. How many of you that eat oatmeal know the farmer or from whence those oats came? What you need to know is, what is the quality of those oats? Now, how many of you know how much a standard bushel of oats weighs? There's a few of you here. 32 pounds. In other words, if you have one bushel of oats, how many of you know what a bushel is? Good. We got a few more hands out of that. So one bushel of oats has a standard of 32 pounds. Okay? In other words, for that given volume that you have, you fill it to the top of that bucket, you weigh it, it's 32 pounds. All right? What happens if you have a bushel of oats, a volume of oats, that only weighs 30 pounds? Or what about 28 pounds? Or what about 24 pounds? And you're eating oatmeal made of those 24-pound oats. Now, am I going to tell you that there's a problem with oatmeal? Absolutely, there's a problem with oatmeal. There's very little mineral in it. Because the whole point of eating oatmeal is not to stuff your belly with rolled oats. It's to give you vitamins, minerals, enzymes, fiber, those things, those building blocks that your body needs in order for it, one, just to function, two, to heal anything that needs healing in the body. That requires building blocks. Let's say that we get a tornado here, and the tornado runs right through the middle of Shipshawana, and it takes out half of the homes. The community gets together and starts rebuilding. What happens, though, if the community can't find any building materials, or they can only find half of the building materials they need, or they can find plenty of 2x2s, but they can't find any 2x4s. There's no 2x6s, and they can't find any rafters. Or they can only find half the number of rafters necessary to replace the roofs on all the houses. What's going to happen? One of two things. Either we're only going to repair half the houses, or we're going to repair all the houses halfway. What happens, particularly here in this part of the country, in the wintertime, if you only put in half the number of rafters on that roof that should have gone in there? And let's say that we have a little extra snow in the wintertime, and it doesn't melt, and so we get a significant amount of snow load on that roof. What's going to happen to that roof now that you've decided to skip half the rafters? It's going to collapse, is it not? It's not going to handle the snow load. Well, it's exactly the same with your body and my body. We need certain building materials in order to have healthy bodies, in order for our body to be able to withstand the snow load. We have to have mineral, vitamins, enzymes, carbohydrates, appropriate fatty acids. We've got to have all of those things. If just the standard is only 32 pounds per bushel, But the oats that you're consuming are only 24 pounds per bushel. You now are trying to fill the need for your house, your body, with half the amount of material that is necessary to build that house. And then you wonder why, you've got a cold every 2-3 weeks. You wonder why you've got headaches. You wonder why you're getting osteoporosis. You wonder why you've got bowel problems. You wonder why you've got memory problems. You wonder why you've got skin problems. You wonder why you're susceptible to every little breeze that comes along. It's no different than trying to repair all of these houses that were damaged in the tornado with half the amount of lumber. Or let's say that we have to have 2x6s or 2x8s in order to make rafters, but the only thing we can get is 2x2s. We're going to have a problem with strength in those rafters. Now, think for a moment that instead of 32-pound oats, we find a farmer who's growing oats that are 42 pounds per bushel. What do you think's going to be the difference in them oats? You sit down with a bowl of oatmeal with 42 pound per bushel oats. First of all, you're going to notice you're going to get filled up a lot faster. You're going to feel full. Not bloated, you're going to feel satisfied. Why? Because there's a tremendous amount more mineral in these 42-pound oats than there are in these 32-pound oats, and certainly a lot more than in those 24-pound oats. So when we think of a standard, because all grains have given standards, oats, for example, are 32 pounds, wheat is 60 pounds, corn is 56 pounds, and so on. But that is just a standard that was arrived at a long time ago based upon what? The standard. Just the standard at that point in time. They had a given volume, and at that point in time, that given volume, which was a trade commodity, was weighed so that they could sell it not by the volume, they could sell it by the weight once they got scale, so they could weigh it, equivalent to this volume. But the thing about it is that standard, 56 pounds for corn, 60 for wheat and oats, or wheat and soy, 32 for oats and so on, that standard does not guarantee or even come close to saying that really that is high-quality oats. Because really, that 32-pound oats is strictly an economic standard for you doing business in trading oats for something else, trading oats for greenbacks, dollars, trading oats for maybe hay, if you're in a trade business, trading oats for lumber, trading oats for potatoes. You have to have some means of being able to equate or trade those commodities. But it says nothing about the actual food value of those commodities. So when we start thinking about diet, we start thinking about human health, we start thinking about the value of a crop, we have to start looking at the nutritional value. The nutritional value, and particularly what gives us weight is mineral. What do we mean by mineral? Calcium, phosphorus, potassium, magnesium, iron, zinc, copper, manganese, selenium, silicon, etc., etc. That's what gives us weight. That's what gives us weight. Those are the key building blocks. Those are the key building blocks that we have to get out of our food in order for us to be healthy, in order for us to regenerate, in order for our immune system to function. The other thing that you're going to find, and we found this, and there was a very nice example that my friends from Illinois shared with me not too long ago, was that there's a baby in the family that was having a problem, failure to thrive. And how many of you know what failure to thrive means? That means this baby's not growing. Mama's milk is not adequate. Why isn't mama's milk adequate? Isn't breast milk supposed to be the best thing for babies? So how is it possible then that mama's milk couldn't be adequate? Because mama's mineralization isn't adequate. There's no way that mama's going to be able to produce high mineralized, high nutrient dense breast milk if mama isn't getting those minerals coming through her diet. The baby wasn't growing, so they tried goat's milk. That didn't help much. So then what happened was, is the one farmer, he convinced the goat farmer to change oats. Purchase different oats. Purchase their oats. And of course he whined and complained because, oh, they're too expensive. But they happened to be 42-pound oats. 42-pound oats in those goats changed the goat milk. It significantly increased the Brix reading. We'll talk about the refractometer and what Brix readings mean. Increased the Brix reading significantly in the goat's milk. Now baby starts to respond. Now you could say that, oh well, we need to feed the baby this, we need to feed the baby that, we need to do this with the baby, we need to do that with the baby. No, the bottom line is we've got to go back to the farm and we got to address the real issue of food quality. Mineralization. Mineralization is what we really have to address. Now, I mentioned the word Brix. Brix is a very important term, B-R-I-X. I'm not talking about B-R-I-C-K-S. You know, those things that this building is built out of, those are B-R-I-C-K-S, Brix. We're talking about B-R-I-X. B-R-I-X, Brix. That is a term given to a scale that goes from 0 to 32 for most of the instruments that we're using. Actually, the scale goes 0 to 100, but the instruments that we're using is called a refractometer. And these refractometers are calibrated 0 to 32, and they're calibrated based upon sucrose in water as the calibrating agent. How many of you understand that there's a difference in how much a gallon of diesel fuel weighs versus a gallon of water? Okay? So there's a difference in density of those things. If you run light, if you hold up a glass with diesel fuel in it, and you try and you set on one side of that with a flashlight versus you set up a glass of water on the other side of it with a flashlight, do you think that you're going to see a different amount of light coming through that glass? Absolutely. That is because different liquids will bend the light differently. It'll diffuse or turn the light or capture the light. That's the basis of a refractometer. Light comes in. They use water and sucrose as the calibrating agent. So a zero, that's distilled water. 100 would be pure sucrose syrup. All right? That's how they calibrate it. So you've got it someplace in between. Then what that means is that then correlates, though, as well to dissolved solids, density. Because, yes, you can put other things on here. I mean, you can put salt water on here. Salt water is not going to be zero. It's not distilled water. It's going to have a Brix reading, not very high, 1, 2, 3, 4, something like that. But the salt, sodium chloride, it's not sugar, it's not sucrose, it will still bend light. But we use some type of calibration method so that if I take this instrument versus I take another instrument, the two instruments are going to read the same solution equally, right? So we have to have a way of calibrating whether or not this instrument is accurate or broken or whatever it's going to do. So that's why it's a 0 to 32 and they use sucrose and water as the calibrating agent. Why is this very important? Because it's a very simple thing. And it goes back to some primary biology. And the primary biology is that what most people say they understand, but they've really forgotten. And that is that what is the basis or what is the whole point of plant growth? Or what is really the difference between plants and animals? Called photosynthesis. Photosynthesis. What is photosynthesis? That is taking carbon dioxide and water in the presence of sunlight and a plant with chlorophyll and producing what? Sugar. That's the whole point of photosynthesis, producing sugar. There is no other point, except we do have some byproducts that come out of that. There's a couple very important byproducts that come out of that. What's one of them? Oxygen. Oxygen. Because the carbon in the carbon dioxide is converted to sugar, the oxygen is released, and we end up with oxygen, which we breathe. So photosynthesis is very, very important. Very important to us. Produces sugar. You say, well, sugar's bad for you. Yeah, pure sugar is bad for you. Good point. The plant doesn't leave it as pure sugar. What does the plant do with that sugar? It converts it into things that it utilizes and builds. 42-pound oats. 24-pound oats. Still got there from the plant, still via photosynthesis. But the thing about it is that sugar actually is the fuel of plants, the fuel as well as the Brix and mortar. So that sugar made through photosynthesis with the sun, that sugar is going to get converted eventually if you have all of the nails and fittings and bolts and plaster and cement and paint and all that kind of stuff. As long as you have all those kinds of things put together in plant terminology, you produce fats, proteins, and carbohydrates. What are those? Those are oats, wheat, soybeans. Those are onions, tomatoes, lettuce, cherries, carrots, apples, cucumbers, radishes, celery, grapes. That's what fats, proteins, and carbohydrates are. Why the difference then between a 42-pound oat and a 24-pound oat? What's the difference? Brix reading. Mineralization. Unfortunately, I've seen too many organic oats that are down here in the 24, 28-pound range. Oh, but they're organic, so they must be better, right? It must be better for you. At the same time, these 42-pound oats are also organic, certified organic. So if that's the case, what does certified organic mean? Now, I'm not bashing organics, but what I am wanting to tell you is something certified organic does not mean that it has higher quality. I like certified organic because certified organic means it's not GMO. And if there's no other reason, we want to make sure that we do not eat GMOs, and that is if we get certified organic. So far, at least, we can protect ourselves from that. It's non-GMO, non-genetically engineered. But the point is that how do we measure easily in the field, how do you, the consumer, determine whether or not we have a better quality oat or a better quality vegetable or a better quality fruit? Well, you can eat it. Yep, you can eat it. But the problem is by the time you get done sampling all the different things to see, you're full. And the other problem is that you're probably going to eat some pretty poor stuff, which means you're going to fill up on low mineral density products, and you haven't accomplished anything. So we use the BRICS meter to determine whether or not the farming practice, the gardening practice, that the gardener or the farmer is implementing is actually accomplishing what we really need to accomplish. There's really only one reason for farming. Produce food. Now, I realize there's a lot of people farming, unfortunately, around the world that they don't have a clue about that. They don't really care. They're not producing food. They're producing a commodity. And they don't care how toxic it is. They don't care how poisonous it is. The only thing that they're concerned about is, are they making money? But that's no different today than it was 5,000 years ago. Human nature hasn't really changed much. What we do need to understand is the whole point of eating food is to get nutrition. We have to go back to the farm. And one sure way of determining whether or not the chatter from the farmer has substance is with a BRICS meter. In other words, oh, these are wonderful tomatoes. Compared to what? Well, they might be wonderful compared to what else they can get in the area, yeah. But the problem is that what we have grown accustomed to relative to food quality in this country is mediocrity at best. If you are thinking that 32-pound oats means that you have good oats, all you are is mediocre at best. We don't want 32-pound oats. We want 42-pound oats, 44-pound oats. If we think that, we grew 56-pound corn. So that's average. That's mediocre relative to mineral value. We need 60-pound corn, 62-pound corn. Tomatoes. Most of the tomatoes, you go to most stores today, and you check the BRICS reading on the tomatoes, and you run somewhere between a 2 and a 5. 3 and 4 is kind of right in the middle where most of them are going to be. You get a 5, and you think, oh my goodness, this is a wonderful tomato. Because what are you used to? You're used to 2s and 3s. You're used to 2s and 3s. It's sort of like telling your child, gee, you did great. You got a D-. Because the child usually is getting Fs. So, wow, a D- is great. It's time for celebration. How many of you would like a D- carpenter to build your house? Hey, it's better than an F. Because an F, they couldn't build the house. But at least with a D-, they could build your house. So we've grown so accustomed to mediocrity. We've grown so accustomed to average taste. And yes, these may be better than what we can get. But we cannot become complacent and settle for a little better than mediocrity. We have to shoot for what really is necessary for our bodies to be healthy. And that's stuff like 42-pound oats. That means we're looking at least an 8 bricks tomato. 12 is what we're shooting for. But 8, we start getting excited. Same thing with a potato, the actual tuber. We've got to be looking at, an 8 would be an exceptional potato. Because most of them are going to be about like tomatoes, are going to be running somewhere between 2 and 5. Most of them. One way as well to tell, you take something like an apple or a potato and you peel it. How many of you are familiar with that? A few of you have peeled tomatoes or apples, yes? Some of you haven't. I still see all the hands on. I know some of you don't. But, you know, you take a knife and you take just the outer layer off. Yeah. If you leave that apple, you peel it, and you set that apple on the table, what happens to it? Turns brown. Have you noticed that certain apples from certain farmers or certain brands turns brown quicker than others? Same thing with a potato. You peel that potato, and it sets out for a while. How long does it take for that potato to brown? What's happening? If you don't want that potato to brown so fast, what do you do to it? Put it in water, right, ladies? Why is it that putting it in water, it doesn't turn brown so fast? You're stopping the oxygen from getting to the surface. What's the oxygen doing? The oxygen is doing what's called oxidation. How many of you know what rusting is? Now, I'm not talking about wheat rust. I'm talking about metal rusting. What is rust? Rust is where the metal interacts with water and oxygen and starts breaking down the metal. That's called rust. All right? It's a similar process. When I peel this apple or that potato, it starts to brown. It's essentially rusting. Now, you will notice, if you start paying attention, the higher the bricks reading of that apple, the higher the bricks reading of that potato, the longer it takes for it to turn brown in the air. Because bricks reading correlates to antioxidant levels. Because bricks reading correlates to mineral levels. It correlates to overall nutritional value. So the higher the bricks reading, the more antioxidants you're going to have in this apple, or that potato, or that pear, or those carrots, or whatever it is. And the more defense there is then against the oxygen in the air. Now, ladies, how many of you have noticed sometimes you peel an apple or you peel a potato, and before you even get done peeling it, it started to turn brown on you? A very low bricks potato. Very low bricks apple, or a peach, or a pear, or something of that nature. And I don't care what they say they did, we're organic. Oh, we're biological, so it doesn't mean anything. Talk is cheap. The only thing that really counts is what is the nutritional value of this compared to what its potential is in nature. I don't care what the standard is for apples across the United States, because the standard for apples across the United States is based upon what? Mediocrity. It's based upon the ineptitude of all the apple farmers in the United States of being able to grow apples. The interesting thing about it is, if agriculture today were left up to nature, you would then find out who really knows how to farm. Because if left up to nature, nature will take out that which is not fit for us to eat. You think God screwed things up? No. It's man that screwed things up. God knows how good this apple needs to be for me to have adequate nutrition when I eat it, for me to be healthy and to stay healthy. So he put in mechanisms that will take this apple out of the food chain so I don't get to it if it's not good enough for me to eat. Those are called insects and disease. Now, the thing about it is that we see with organic farmers is that unfortunately a lot of organic farmers still don't get it. All they are is conventional farmers that put a different hat on. Because they haven't changed their mindset one bit. Out there on the standard chemical farm, they see an insect, kill it. They see a weed, kill it. They see a disease, kill it. With whatever poison they can get their hands onto. Isn't it amazing, you think about it a moment, where do we spread the majority of poisons in the world? On our food. Only humans would be stupid enough to do that. Animals, at least, know to protect their food. They don't put it in harm's way. Only humans are stupid enough to put their food in harm's way. So, this farmer, they really like war. Isn't it amazing how many farmers say that they're conscientious objectors and say that, oh, I don't believe in war, but they can't wait to get out into the field with a chemical weapon to kill something? Isn't it amazing? Because where do you think all these pesticides came from? They came out of World War I and World War II chemical weapon stores. That's what they're all about. So, that farmer thinks, oh no, I don't use pesticides. I'm organic. We use copper sulfate. We use sulfur. We use pyrethroids. We use all those other kinds of things. Really? Interesting. What is your mindset? Why do you think you have to use all those things? Oh, because I have to kill the insects. I have to kill the weeds. I have to kill the diseases. Really? Do you have a different mindset then than the chemical guy out there spraying Roundup or some other pesticide? No, it's the same mentality long term. Now, I recognize as a business person, yes, in transition, you know, it's going to take a little while to get those soils turned around so that we don't need those things. Because once you get the bricks reading high, you don't have the insect disease problems because God knows, nature knows, these things are okay. We don't have to take them out of the food chain. But you see, if you've never experienced that in your garden, or you've never experienced that in your field, you think, that, oh, that's just fantasy land up there someplace. But the reality is, once the bricks reading passes higher than a given threshold, and typically 12 at the weakest point, what does 12 at the weakest point mean? 12 means at the weakest point of the plant, 24/7, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So if you're growing corn, that's in the stalk, typically is going to be the lowest reading. Your highest reading typically is either going to be in the ear or in the leaf. Your stalk is going to be your lowest. So that has to be 12. Your weakest link, your weakest place, your lowest place in that plant, 12 is the threshold, is the goal. And how do you know if your nutritional program on the farm or in the garden is working? Is the bricks reading going up? It's pretty simple. Is the bricks reading going up? It is that straightforward. Once you get to that point, insects don't bother that crop anymore. Now, some of you in here, I know, have already experienced that on your farms or in your gardens. You've noticed that, hey, 5 years ago, these beetles were eating away at my vegetables, but now they're eating the weeds. If you've never seen that, it's amazing to watch. It really is amazing to watch. Because we have problems with lamb's quarter and foxtail and any other kind of weed, and all of a sudden, those things are being inundated by the insects, and they're not touching my tomatoes, or they're not touching my potatoes, or my cereal grains, or corn, or any of those kinds of things. You say, oh, what in the world? What do we spray out here? We sprayed nutrition.
Continued on part 2.